This podcast is part of the BombPod Media Network.
I shoot the lights out till it's bright out. Oh, just another lonely night. Are you willing to sacrifice your life?
Staying in the shadows. It's called probing. Make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
For the rest of the night.
You guys hear that?
He's out there.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I am your host, Tony Merkel, and you are listening to The Confessionals, a proud partner of the BombPod Media Network and a featured show on blogtalkradio.com. If you've had an encounter or a story you'd like to share with me on the show, go ahead and shoot me an email. My email address is theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. That's theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the connection section, and you can reach me that way as well. Either way works for me, just get a hold of me. Now, this week's show is going to be a little different because we're not doing the iTunes shoutouts because I am pre-recording this show way early in advance, because if you're hearing this show right now, that only means one thing. It means I'm in the hospital because my wife is having a baby, and I'm excited about that. So we're not doing iTunes shoutouts this week because it is a pre-recorded show, but I want to let you know, after this show is done and you're done listening to The Confessionals, head on over to the Renegade Podcast. You can find us on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, a bunch of different places like that. But listen to the episodes. It's a funny show. If you want to hear me talk a little bit more with my co-host Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles and Woody Pratt, go ahead and check out that show because we just talk about a lot of different stuff. It's kind of like the Seinfeld of podcasts. It's like a show about nothing, but it's still really entertaining. So go ahead and check that out and leave us a rating or review over there as well. Now, this week we have Jason coming on, and Jason comes on to share a lot of different stories of kind of like a paranormal haunted house that he lived in. But it seems like it was attached to certain members of the family at certain times, and it actually traveled with them outside the house. Pretty interesting stuff. Let's get to Jason right after this. Okay, tonight I have Jason coming on, and Jason and I connected with each other a little while ago, Jason, and you and I kind of hit and miss for a little bit. How you doing?
Doing good. I'm glad to finally be on with you because it's been something I wanted to share. So,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were missing each other a little bit there. Stuff. I think you were sick and then I was sick or something like that, but I'm glad we're definitely getting on. So you've grown up in a haunted house, and when you contacted me on Facebook, you're like, oh, it wasn't even about your experience. We were talking about something else. And you're like, oh, yeah, I've had a haunted house experience when I was growing up, but I didn't know if I should contact you. I was like, dude, yeah, of course. Like, that's what I'm about. So I'm really glad you're coming on tonight, man. So why don't you just take it away and share with us what you've experienced?
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it's a story that the experience kind of, it's like three different sections of time. I grew up in upstate New York, actually, right outside of Saratoga Springs, which is a pretty big, like, Civil War era, you know, type of surroundings and whatnot. There was a Battle of Bennington, there was a Battle of Saratoga, all this kind of stuff. So the little town that I grew up in outside of Saratoga had a very rich history with the Quakers and Indians actually fighting each other. And then actually the road I lived on was the road that Colonel Baum took to the Battle of Bennington into Vermont. So there's just like a lot of, like I said, rich history and stuff like that. So my parents bought the house in, I think it was 1967. My father moved up from Queens and my mother lived in Albany. They got married, obviously, and then, you know, bought this home. There was one owner prior, and they actually built the home. So it wasn't like this old house or anything like that. I think they built the house in like 64 or something like that. It was like a couple years old when they built it. You know, just typical ranch style house, all this kind of stuff, dirt road. Across the way from the house, there was an old cemetery that just was kind of there. A lot of family plots, stuff like that and whatnot, but nobody really ever like gave it a peace of mind or anything like that. So when my parents moved in, my mother had two previous children that were older than my parents. When they got married, they created me and my little brother. But pretty much straight away from the time that my parents and my mother's two daughters moved into the home, things were just not really like bad, but just always just kind of like off from what they said. Obviously, I was a little bit younger, or wasn't even really actually around at that point. But there was just always like a weird tension in the air, especially with my older sister. She was probably about 8 at the time. Just acting out a lot. I mean, a lot of stuff could be, you know, typical, you know, kid stuff, but there was, as they described it, there was just kind of like this very kind of like just a change in attitudes. But again, they didn't really give it too much of a peace of mind just because, you know, they just moved and my mother got married to my father, all this kind of stuff, you know, typical could be growing pains, but, everything just kind of mounted from that point. So fast forward to when me and my brother come along, my earliest memory of the house was probably about 5 years old, where I remember as a kid, like just always feeling like something was around me. And my brother, not so much. But I always just felt that there was something always like near me, watching me, that kind of stuff. So it's like I said, about 5 or 6 at this point. Then the first, I guess, experience I could say was right around that, you know, initial memory was, I was standing in the kitchen again, 5 or 6 years old. And I went to throw something into the garbage can. And the garbage can moved, like it slid probably about, I don't know, between 1 and 2 feet in the opposite direction of me throwing something into the can. So whatever I was throwing into the can just like, you know, hit the floor. It was actually a paper towel, I remember.
Wow.
Yeah, and it just moved. And even at being at that young age, I was just kind of like, didn't want to believe. But I'm like, how did that happen? Like, I'm looking for something that pushed it. Like, you know, at 6 years old, trying to debunk how this garbage can just like slid across the floor. But I remember at the same time, just being like, well, like that makes sense. Like, you know, it just makes sense that happens because I, you know, there's this energy that's just kind of like vibrating around. So it's like my first real kind of memory of like, okay, like this is going to be a long, like, you know, 18 years. So at the same time, like my sister at this point is like probably 13, 14. And she's just, well, she was 8 at the time. So 5, 6 years. So that makes sense. About 14, just like wild, constantly in her room. Not really coming out, constantly fighting with my parents, making everybody's life pretty much hell, like in the house. She just progressed in that manner of just acting out. And probably at about 16, she got into witchcraft pretty hard, I guess. And she was actually practicing witchcraft in her room. That my parents figured out she was in there messing with that stuff. And we weren't you know, super religious, but we went to church on Sunday. We were raised Methodist, you know, typical upstate, you know, New York, you know, Methodist family. You know, crossing the house, all that kind of stuff, but you know, not kneeling on the floor and repenting every day, you know, just a normal, middle class, my dad went to work, my mother was a stay at home mom, you know, just very suburban,
right,
whatever, you know, normal upbringing. So there wasn't really, why I'm saying that is because I don't want to paint the picture that she was lashing out against religion or anything like that. It was just, she became very into it. So she started seeking out other people that practice it and all this kind of stuff. So when she started doing this stuff in the room, I never actually saw it. So, but she was vocal about it. We should check, you should check this out. She was constantly trying to tempt me and my brother to, join in. And, we were just no, not into that, Cynthia, you know? So, that's when stuff really kind of went bonkers. The only way I could explain it, just from me being a novice, would be, opened up a door, or a porthole or something, And there was previous energy in the home, but I said, that her, even her room, when you walked into it, it was just sick and get me out of here. And my aunt actually came to visit around this period of time. My mother's side of the family is kind of intuitive, I guess you could say. My aunt came and walked in the house and walked down the hall towards her room, and literally stopped. Now she had my mom wasn't calling her up and saying, this is what Cynthia's doing in the room. It was just, she didn't know. And got to the end of the hall, and it was, it sounds dramatic, it's out of a movie, but it kind of, it happened, and stood in front of the door and was just wow, this is really, not good. There's a really bad feeling here. And, my mother kind of escorted her down the hall and, went to the living room and was it's kind of funny because, we've been, this is what Cynthia is doing right now. She was like, oh, she has to stop. So anyway, she wound up running away and all this kind of stuff. And things just kind of kept, again, it was just an energy thing. A lot of missing things would go missing, constantly, problems with electronics. Not that there was that many electronics in the mid-80s, but, just things would just stop working. Things missing, pets. We always had numerous cats in the house through this period of time. And it was just, the cats would just go nuts. They would be in the hallway batting at nothing, running around, sniffing at the door, to that room, turn around, blast down the hallway, that kind of stuff. And my bedroom was kind of kitty corner to her door. So it's a long hallway. So her door was at the very end. Mine was to the right, if you're looking down the hall. And even at night, getting up, I remember just laying in bed, I'd have to go to the bathroom and just holding it as long as humanly possible, because I didn't want to walk by that door. And it wasn't a sense, I was scared, but it was more when you'd walk by the door, you felt you were being pushed. And I remember just cutting that corner and just feeling and just like feeling something at my back, like for years. So anyway, I kind of fast forward through that. So my sister took off, and then my other sister, who was older, she went on to college and all this kind of stuff. So it was just kind of like me and my brother and my parents left in the house. So that's kind of like, you know, part one, I guess. You know, it's like, you know, the fuse was lit, I guess, would be the best way to put it. So now I'm probably like, I'm 14 now, you know, and my little brother, we're like Irish twins, I guess they call us. We're like a year apart. So he's like 13. And like things were calm. Like they definitely felt better. But there was always just like an oddness. So I decided to keep my room because I was like, I'm not taking that room. Like, I'm just not taking it. Because me and my brother would bunk together. You know, me and my brother shared a room, and then my two sisters. Well, actually, Cynthia had the, you know, her room, and then my other sister had another room. So my brother was like, yeah, whatever. He was, like I said, he was just kind of like, you know, what do? You know? So he's like, I'll take it. So he takes the room. And the other thing I want to throw out, this room is always cold, constantly cold. It could be 98 degrees out and 100% humidity. That room is cold and there's not an AC unit in there. You know what I mean? So my brother takes it, and I'm going to be 100% honest with you. He went through a pretty hard rebellious stage. I'm not saying like immediately he went in the room and like, you know, oh, like, you know, I'm pissed at the world now. It was just, he changed. Like, he literally changed. Like, I would walk into his room and be like, hey, what's going on? And, you know, he'd be in there like cutting up his G.I. Joes, breaking, you know, just breaking things. We had, you know, desks, you know, parents got us a nice desk to do our schoolwork on. Like, he carved up like the whole top of his desk with a knife. You know, my mother was like, what did you do? We just bought you this. And he's like, it's mine, you know. Could be a typical boy stuff, but, you know, my brother was very sweet prior to this, you know. And again, it's just that energy. The other thing that happened while this, you know, part two was starting of everything was my parents decided to do some renovations on the house. And they built this huge addition to the back of the home. And during that period, I know, but really kind of ushered in like a new set of problems, to be honest with you. Where now it's like, you know, seeing, you know, I don't know what you want to call them, shadow figures. Like now, like the visual things are coming. It wasn't, you know, part one was all energy. Now it's like energy and like, you know, black things walking around. And just constantly seeing a large figure and, you know, other like, you know, waist high kind of figures and all this kind of stuff. The typical, like, out of the corner of the eye, sitting there watching TV and you're like, oh, who just walked by? Oh, nobody walked by, you know, just nonstop, to the point where it, you know, in the beginning it was kind of like, please no, like, why is this happening now? It was just part of the daily routine. And also, excuse me. At this point, like me and my brother, both started to get touched like quite a bit, like at nighttime when we were sleeping. It was always the feet. And I know sleep paralysis is something that's real, but there was probably like five or six times that, you know, I woke up and was just completely like pinned. My brother never really had that happen. But I did. And the other thing that started happening at this point is it became part of like my mother's routine as well, which she started getting touched at night and stuff like that. Again, nothing like violent, you know, but when somebody slaps your foot and you're sleeping, like somebody slaps your foot, you know, you're like, you know, everybody knows what that feels like, you know, being touched. So, but the sleep paralysis thing, that was something that like really kind of targeted me and just like really scared the shit out of me. I don't know if I'm like more open to things or what, but, like I just kind of felt like a lot of the energy kind of like lingered around me a little bit. Yeah. So the same thing with the animals and all this kind of stuff. You know, cats running around. I literally watched my cat do a somersault once. It just kind of was sitting there and just went, I don't know how else to say it, but butt overhead and did a flip from the sitting position. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. It was a big cat. It's a Maine Coon, white Maine Coon cat. The thing was huge. So now, like I said, my brother's kind of getting agitated a little bit and all this kind of stuff. He really dove into Aleister Crowley.
Wow.
He started listening to like, you know, he's a college professor now, you know what I mean? He's like, you know, he's a hipster, but, he went, you know, he was like, you know, really got into, you know, dark. Yeah. I mean, I listened to Ozzy, but you know, he really got into Ozzy Osbourne, and, really got into Crowley, and started studying. I remember the book he went out and got. It was called the Book of the Abramian Mage, which is the book that of incantations that actually Crowley studied. So it was like he went to the source. He's like,
okay.
Yeah, and kind of started kicking around with that a little bit and had some buddies come over and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, like-minded fellows like my sister did, actually. It was almost like watching the same kind of the same thing happen again. But at the same time, he wasn't lashing out as much as my sister. And to be honest with you, looking back at it, you know, the kind of like the sets of kids that went through the house, we were all kind of at puberty when we were like targeted, you know. Like my sister was hitting puberty when she kind of like lost her shit. And so was my brother, you know.
Yeah.
Which I've heard that. I don't know. You know, I'm just telling, you know, it's just what I've heard, that spirits will target, you know, teens, adolescents going through puberty, drug addicts, alcoholics, you know, people like that. People like kind of people that are emotionally in turmoil. So, yeah, he started messing around with that stuff. And, you know, I even said to him, you know, at the time, like, you know, Justin, this like really isn't a good idea, you know, like, you know, what happened before. And he was just like, well, he just didn't care. I don't know. You know, he just didn't care. My parents caught wind of it. They weren't very happy, but, you know, he was getting good grades and all that kind of stuff. They probably could have done a little bit more, honestly, to like stop it. But they
well, he's getting good grades. So
yeah, you know, Crowley, you know, what do you know? You know?
So, yeah. Well, why don't we take a break right now and we'll come back and kind of jump right back into the story with your brother and things like that. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Okay, we're back, and you left off where you were talking about how your parents were pretty lenient with him when it came to this stuff, as long as he was getting good grades. So why don't you kind of walk us into what happened next?
Yeah, so long story short, I'll tighten this up a little bit. So he, during that whole period of time, now those shadow... Now, keep in mind, along the way, I totally left this out. My father was always like, you guys are crazy. he was a mechanical engineer. He's German. You know, he's a World War II veteran at the time. You know, he was just like, you're like, come on, guys. Like, you're just scaring each other. What are you doing? You know, but like my father would be, you know, I'd wake up in the morning exhausted. And he's like, you know, you got to get some sleep at night. And I'm like, Dad, I can't sleep. I went through probably 5 years where I couldn't sleep just because I just stuff, you know, I was just petrified. You know, my desk would shake and all this kind of stuff. So brother goes through this stuff. He's messing around, whatever. So me and my brother and my mother left on what was like a Saturday in the summertime. And we went out. I think we went to Saratoga. We went to the track or something like that, catch the horse races. And we come back. And my father stayed at the house. We come back, like, I don't know, 3-4 hours later. And my father is like, my mother's name is Sylvia. Sylvia, can I talk to you for a second? Mother comes out, and they walk down the hall, and they go into my brother's room. My brother's room is, like, turned upside down. Like, all his cassette tapes, like, thrown all over the room. It's going to sound weird. He had a suit of armor in his room. Like, the suit of armor was moved away from the wall and, like, smack dab in the middle of the room. Stuffed animals, like, just mayhem. So, at this point, like, me and my brother catch on what's going on. And my father is now talking to all three of us. And he's like, I was in the bathroom. Now, my sisters had kids at this point. And he goes, I was in the bathroom, and I heard two little kids run down the hall and go into your brother's room. And he goes, I come out of the bathroom. I'm calling for Christine. That's my other sister. I'm calling for Christine. And he's like, there's nobody here. He was like dumbfounded. He goes, and I walk into the room, and this is what I see. And he's like, this is like 3 minutes. He's like, what is going on? And then he kind of like laid it on my brother, like typical, like, you know, World War II veteran engineer. He's like, whatever you're doing in this room, just cut the crap. And like walked away. So now my mother's like, guys, like, you know, whatever, you know, just like stop it. And my brother, like, I'm like, Justin, what the, like, he's like, I don't know. Like, I didn't do this. Like, I have no part of it. I'm like, yeah, but you know what, like, you're doing. He's like, yeah, I know. But like, it's all like, he's kind of like came clean. He's like, it's all bullshit. Right. I'm like, no, dude. Like, you know what, like, this house is like messed up, you know? And I'm like, you know, remember I went to a psychiatrist, like this house is screwed up. And that moment, it really kind of brought him, well, he kind of had us like come to Jesus. You know, he got very scared. So the other like weird part of this, and this is hand to God, this the God's honest truth. If I didn't witness it, I'd probably be like, you sure, man? So my wife said that there was those cassette tapes thrown all over the place.
Yeah.
Let's say there was 10 of them. Say there's 10. Six of them, upon trying to play after that, all got eaten. I don't know. I just thought that was very strange. And there was nothing wrong with my brother's like tape player or anything like that. It was a nice Sony tape deck, whatever. But they all got eaten. Well, not all, but about half of them when they went to play them. I don't know. I just thought, I always thought that was strange.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't know. It's like, what is it, like the kind of like a magnetism, you know, because they say, you know, spirits are like magnetic energy. You know, maybe it did something with the magnets and the tape or something. So after this, now my, you know, this is like part three here. After this, my father becomes the target. That's, I don't know how to phrase it. So it's, I mean, it's all still around, you know, I'm everybody's seeing shadow stuff. We're still losing the remotes, and then they're getting put back on the coffee table. You know, dishwashers, you know, been replaced four times at this point. TV's turning on and off, like all this kind of stuff. Well, it's still going. But my father, at this point, becomes, like I said, the one that's kind of targeted. So the things that they were, things that were happening to my father was that apparently what came through in, like, a, that second wave of situations with some sort of witchcraft in the house, brought through a Quaker man and a little, his two children, a little boy and a little girl. So my father, over the next, I don't know, let's say we're 15 at this point, we moved out when we were 18. My father, for over the next, well, honestly, after we moved out, it kept going on. So my father, for the next, you know, from that day forward, he's passed now. My parents no longer own the home. They sold, my mother sold it, and she didn't want to stay there, to be honest with you. The man, as he called him, would just appear to my father. Like, my father would be sitting in the living room in his chair, or, you know, Archie Bunker chair, and in on the couch, you know, to the right of my father, he would see the Quaker man, like full apparition, clothing, color of eyes, and everything, just sitting there. To the point where my father actually, you know, was like, yeah, he has very blue eyes. He has a black beard. He wears he's a Quaker. He has a black hat. He has black suspenders, white shirt, boots. Like, no, this is coming from the guy that's like, doesn't believe garbage, you know, like man of science. And there was a few situations where, you know, he'd be like that, you know, like with that first incident, that was the first incident where he saw him on the couch sitting, like basically sharing company with him. And he was very vocal about it. And I always like, okay, like dad's like talking about this stuff finally, you know, after like 16 years. And he was like, I'm like, dad, you know, did you, now nobody's seen this man besides my father. And it's like, dad, you know, does that, you know, what, is that scary? And he's like, yeah, it scared the crap out of me. Like, he's like, I think I'm alone. I look over there and there's some guy sitting on the couch. And then, you know, well, what happens next? He's like, well, you know, I get up and I look over again and it's gone. You know, he's like, it's like 5 seconds, you know, it's, you know, five, you know, seconds. So after that incident, my parents, it was probably a couple months later, were, my mother, the grudge was off of my parents' room. So at three in the, but we had neighbors too. So at 3 or 4 in the morning, my mother woke up because she heard the car door open and close. And she's like, oh wow, you know, Paul's getting home late, you know, next door, you know, typical like gossip stuff. She thought, like, you know, neighbors coming home like bombed or something.
Start the phone chain.
What's that?
Yeah. Maybe start the phone chain.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so that was that. She was like, oh, you know, whatever, next door. That morning, this is probably the one that freaks me out the most. My father gets in his car. and he's driving to work. And he looks, you know, when you look in your rear view mirror, you know, your dashboard mirror. And the man is in his car. And he said it was, out of everything, all of his stories, this was the one that really got him because it really freaked him out. He almost went off the road because he just like yanked the wheel to pull over, I guess. And he said all he could see in the rearview mirror was the man's blue eyes. And pulled over. He said he could, you know, he could kind of see them perpetually, you know, for a couple of seconds. You know, pulls the car over, you know, looks on the back, and the guy's gone. And he said he just kind of like sat there shaking. Like he was like, why, you know, what is going on now? Like, what's happening? So through all that situation, things are still kind of cruising in the house. It's not as bad though. It's kind of tapering off a little bit. Cause I think we're just kind of older now and, you know, we just kind of come to peace with a lot of stuff. But I would have these dreams while this stuff was going on. Could be premeditated. I don't know. But all I know is I was having them. And, where I had this reoccurring dream of this man that looks like the man, running across what would be our lawn. We lived on a large hill, it was like a couple acres. Running across this hill, like holding a small child. And there was just kind of like general, like, it was like a, like kind of chaos, like almost looked like he was running through like a, like what would have been like a war zone, but it was like daytime. There was like, you know, smoke behind him. What I can remember, it looked like it would be like a wagon fire, some sort of fire. And just this man, like, just like, you know, high stepping it, holding this child. And I kept having like the name Jim, like James or Jim or Jimmy or something, like kind of like racing through my head. And, the other thing that I'll condense them all. This happened numerous times. But my father would be inside, the house. Like, we have a lot of windows and there's like a lot of bay windows and kind of all this kind of stuff in the house. So you could very clearly see outside, and he would just see the man like tromping like the grounds, like just kind of like patrolling the grounds of the house. And, I always thought that was kind of strange. Cause the way my father described it, it's like, he was like looking for something or kind of like just kind of staking his territory. And the kids, my father saw the kids a couple times, but not as much as the man. But he did see, you know, like a little boy and a little girl in, you know, what would have been period clothing, Quaker clothing at the time. But one thing that really ties into all this is that there was that Quaker Indian battle that was, well, the peace feather, there was actually, they signed a treaty, the peace feather for that, you know, for that treaty was about 3 miles from our house in like this little kind of like little museum type of thing, you know, that was probably the size of, you know, a 10 by 10 room, you know, but this peace feather was like not on our property, but near it. So there was definitely some deep roots with the Native Americans and the Quakers. So after we kind of like pieced all this together, a little bit older, like I went off to college and so did my brother. Oh, one quick little story. The day I moved out of that house, it literally felt like I was under a microscope. like just all eyes. Like I just felt like I was like completely being watched at this point. And at this point, I wasn't really, you know, I'm 18. I wasn't really scared anymore, you know. just kind of had like a, you know, been there, done that kind of attitude about it. You get pretty numb to this stuff if you kind of grow up with it. And I've talked to a couple other people that have had, you know, kind of, I guess, not lifelong, but, you know, well, kind of formative years, you know, experiences. And you just kind of get numb to it. You're just like, oh, well, there's another black thing and, you know, whatever. So, but that day that I was moving out of the house, it was like a parade of follies. It was crazy. I couldn't, like, you know, it's like an hour to find my keys. And yeah, I could have been in disarray, but it was just kind of like perpetual, like just nonstop. Like I was constantly being tripped, you know. At the time I had CDs, you know, picked up my duffel bag of CDs to bring into the car. That I remember zipping, it's not zipped. And I spilled, you know, just like kind of all this stuff. And when I just remember like walking out of the door and it was just like, oh my God, like just like a relief, but kind of also had like this deep, like remorse kind of feeling. and I wasn't remorseful, you know. It was just kind of, I almost feel that kind of whatever is or was in that house at that time, like became very attached to everybody. Because again, it was never really bad besides the negative energy in that one room. But it was just kind of like ever present, you know. It was almost like a living, breathing, you know, kind of entity that just kind of sat, you know, like in that house. And we had a lot of good memories too. You know, it wasn't all bad. You know, I had a great high, like, here I'm going to say I had a great childhood, but you know, it was like, you know, like it wasn't all bad. You know, we had a lot of good times too. But so after that, kind of like when we got a little bit older, me and my brother were just kind of, you know, we come visit my, you know, go back home, visit my parents, stuff like that. And it's kind of the same stuff. You know, my mom's like, oh yeah, the, you know, cat's batting at the air and black stuff flying around and like nothing changed. But, you know, again, it was nothing bad, you know, and be like, oh dad, did you see the guy? He's like, yeah, I saw him like, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, like it was just kind of always there. Kind of funny if you think about it. But so me and my brother were like, well, what's up with this? Like, we never like went to the cemetery across the house, across the street. You know, it was weird. Like, we just never went there. So me and my brother were like, hey, let's go check out that cemetery. I mean, we went in it, but we never checked it out. You know what I mean? We never read tombstones or anything like that. Yeah, we'd go in there and like shoot BB guns at each other, you know. So we go over there and we're like looking at, what was her name? Oh, so we're looking at the tombstones, all this kind of stuff. And, we find, it wasn't kind of like an aha, like, you know, oh, we figured it all out, but it was kind of weird. There was a family plot, by the name of Burdock. That was a man. It didn't say his first name. It just said Burdock on it. It was really weird. So I don't know. Maybe his name was Jim. And two little children. One was Sarah Burdock, who was 4 years old, and her brother, I think it was Timothy. I could be wrong on that, but Timothy Burdock, who was 3 years old. So there was a family plot with, you know, I guess, I don't remember seeing the mother. Maybe it was, I don't know, it was a while ago. But I remember, like, seeing Burdock, which was the highest stone, which at that time would have been the father, you know, usually the, what do they call it? Is that the patriarch of the family? Has the highest tombstone? I don't know. But usually they're like, that's, you know, the king of the family has the biggest tombstone. So I'm guessing that would have been the father. And then to the right of the father would have been the two little kids. And then a couple of years later, I'm almost at the end, but a couple of years later, I got married and whatnot. And I've never been really open about this, to be honest with you. I mean, like, I've talked to like people, but you know, it's not something I run my mouth about, because it's personal, you know. So I opened up to my wife about it a little bit, and she was, she's pretty open-minded. And she was like, wow, that's really interesting. And she goes, do you ever go to the library and like look at the records or anything? Like, no, just went to the cemetery like a couple of years ago, So she's like, yeah, let's go down to the library. I'm like, all right, let's check it out. So go down to the library and across, okay, so where the house is up on the hill, across the street would be to the left, was this across almost like diagonal from the house would be the cemetery, but it's like across the road. I could probably hit like a 5-iron to it if I, hit the ball just right. So anyway, we looked at the map of the grounds, and there was a church. I can't remember what it was. I think it was it might've been a Quaker church, that would have been to the right of the cemetery, which would make sense because there was a house there at this point because it was a big piece of open land. But, you know, people usually put a cemetery next to a church, I guess, right? So, and it turned out that that church burned to the ground. Not saying that this family died in the church. When it burned, I don't know, like it just said that the whatever we read, it said that this church burned. I don't know if there was deaths or whatever, but there was a very large fire in this church burned to the ground. And the other thing that it did is that there was large fields. And I guess there was a massive fire that just almost like it wouldn't have been a forest fire, but like a field fire or something like that. Hayfield fire, I guess, that got decimated too. So I was kind of validating a little bit considering like that weird dream I had a bunch of times with him, like the man, like running across the field,
right.
Cradling this child. Again, I'm not saying that's what happened, but in my dream, I saw smoke and fire and, the man. So there was definitely just like a lot of turmoil. The ground was also very wet. There was a lot of water, that ran underneath the ground. Like we had willows in our driveway, which is weird for St. New York, weeping willows. That's how wet the ground was. And they do say that, I guess spirits, tend to channel through streams and whatnot. Water, they like water and stuff like that. It just kind of just seemed like a, I don't know what you would call it. I guess like a porthole or, some sort of door was just kind of there at the beginning and then just kind of kept getting cracked open a little bit further.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stupid kids.
Well, let me ask you a question here. And you know what? Let's take a break first. And when we come back, I'll ask you this question here that goes into this whole other round that we're about to embark on here. So we'll be right back after this break. Okay, we're back from the break. And Jason, do you get the sense that this is something that was part of the house before you guys got there? All right, so you said that your sister was in the room, then your brother goes into the room. They both dabbled with, satanic things. And so, do you think it was something that was attached to that room or the house in general? Because at the same time, and these are all just thoughts that I was having when you were saying this.
Yeah.
Like, at the same time, you said that your dad saw that Quaker in the car. And from that point, from that point of view, it makes you feel like maybe there's something haunting the family, not necessarily the house. What are some of the conclusions that you think of?
There was it got to the point where my mom was actually friends with the previous owners. She reached out to them at one point and just asked them point blank, like, has anything ever happened? You know? And she was like, no, the house is fine. You know, nothing. But again, they didn't live there very long. You know, they were only there for a couple of years. I guess something could have happened in a couple of years, but, there was no real history with anything. It could be in this, I mean, I definitely could look at it with the family aspect. Because when they moved in, that's when my sister kind of started, you know, at a very young age, just acting out like horribly. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Bad Seed, but I mean, she was just like, it's a mean thing to say, but I mean, it's just, you know, just like, don't kill the cat, you know, like, yeah, it could be because, like, my mother's side of the family does have that tendency, I guess, you know. Her and her sisters, not my mom so much. She was always just not dismissive, but not as into it as my, you know, like my aunt, her sister Marilyn, was extremely intuitive, you know, to the point of, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, maybe psychic abilities, stuff like that. But nothing crazy beyond that.
Okay.
I did move to New Orleans after, for a period of time, actually before I met my wife, it was kind of after college, before marriage, all that kind of stuff. And, I don't know. I mean, that's just the city, but it was something that, like, I hadn't felt since I, you know, moved away from my home. You know, my college dorm wasn't haunted. when I got down to New Orleans, I did, like, have almost that kind of same energy kind of thing. But it's just so, I don't know if you ever, I'm sure you haven't. Have you been down there?
No, but I mean, I've talked to plenty of people from New Orleans, and any kind of haunting experience that you have in New Orleans, I'm sure doesn't surprise anybody. That city has, you know, such a history with voodoo and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know, you know, that it kind of flared up. Yeah. It kind of, you know, and I didn't go down there with, like, ooh, let's find some ghosts. Like, I'm not that guy.
Right.
I'm not, like, seeking this stuff out. But I did happen to take an apartment across the street from one of those, you know, raised cemeteries. And I would have, like, kind of almost the same thing with the shadow figures and stuff like that. One day I did see pretty clearly a, you know, kind of a pale, it wasn't a woman, it was a girl, pale girl, probably 18 or 19, with, like, long black hair, just kind of walked by my door. But that was it, you know. So, but the house thing, it was just, you know, kind of just how it went through the family, I always thought was kind of interesting, to say, you know, put it mildly. You know, how my father, the biggest skeptic, you know, was the one that was kind of, you know, caught the big end of the stick, you know, after, you know. But again, you know, he never really, it definitely freaked him out. One time he actually tried that. He was like, I don't know if it was like the day or whatever. I was actually there. This is actually kind of a good story, I guess. So we're standing in the living room. All of a sudden I see my father, like, sprint over, like, to the window, and he's like, there. And I knew when he said there, you know, cause I've been, like, dying to, like, I want to see this guy, you know? I'm like, Dad, where? He's like, he's up on the hill. So, like, we shoot out the sliding glass door, And like, me and my dad are like running up the hill. I'm like, Dad, I don't see anything. He's like, he didn't either. He was like, where did he go? Where did he go? Like, he was trying to catch it. You know, it was like, why did you just ask him a question when he was in the car? You know, like,
pull out the questionnaire in the car.
Yeah, it just got to that point where he was just like, you know, set a trap. He went out and got a, he's passed now, but he actually went out and got a, him and my mother went out and bought like an EMF detector and all this stuff. And I wasn't there for it, but you know, I talked to him about it. And they would get high EMF readings in that back room. I'm like, what are you guys doing? Like, you're like retired, like running around the house with an EMF reader, you know, like, you know, ghost hunters here.
They got bored, man.
Yeah, they did. They did. They did.
Well, I mean,
but, yeah, I mean,
your sister and brother, did they ever stop doing witchcraft and studying Aleister Crowley?
My brother did. Pretty much right after that, his room got turned. Like I said, he got really scared. My sister, who unfortunately I really don't speak to that much, is a Wiccan. She has gone that route, I guess, if you're going to choose a lane. Personally, I think it's all kind of should be left alone, but
yeah,
she still practices, I guess I should say.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I find it interesting. I really wish we could kind of narrow down, cause you know, you've listened to the show. I enjoy, you know, listening to people's stories and trying to put pieces together. And, I really wish I could figure out maybe an origin of how this all started, whether it was already at the house or if it was, you know, something that was attached with the family somehow. Because a lot of times, like I said earlier, a lot of times people talk about haunted houses and it really is confined to the house. But in that situation and stuff, your dad experienced something that was not in the house. It was in the car traveling with him. I mean, that was something that, like, you can't say was confined to the house or chose to stay in the house.
No.
Like, it was very much involved in each one of your lives, you know? And I don't even know if the Quaker is the same entity as what your brother or what your brother and sister's room had going on. And like,
see, I don't
it could
think
be,
so either.
Yeah. It could be totally different things. A lot of times people will talk about, because I'm open about my faith, a lot of times people, you know, think that I think everything is demonic. And I think a lot of things are demonic, but I don't think everything is. I don't understand everything. I don't have a perfect explanation, but I can tell you this, that because I'm a Christian and I do believe what the Bible says, you know, it's in the Bible, it talks about King Saul saying that he went to basically a witch and he wanted to communicate to a dead prophet, Samuel. And this witch actually summoned Samuel's spirit. And by all intents and purposes, King Saul was actually talking to Samuel, the ghost. And the Bible even called it a ghost. And so like, the Bible didn't say it was a demon pretending to be the ghost of Samuel. It didn't say anything like that. It just said he was talking to the ghost of Samuel. So that, I mean, if you take the Bible and you actually believe what it says, that leads you to believe that there are such things as ghosts and not everything is demons. And that's, I mean, it's a simplistic way to look at things, but that's kind of how I look at it. So when it comes back to your house, in my mind, there could very well be more than one thing going on there.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% because that was always kind of the feeling. It was like I said, in the early years, that's why I kind of like break it up into like a trilogy almost, because it was like a shift in energy. You know, in the early years, like, you know, chapter one, it was negative. And it was like nasty energy. And then like my brother kind of fell into that a little, you know, and then it was kind of really at the appearance, if you look at it from, you know, 100 yards, with the appearance of the man and the children, you know, they didn't do anything. You know, they just hung out. You know, they were just like, you know, cruising in the car, running around the yard.
Right.
That there was like a happy energy, a better energy, I should say. There was still notes of like, oh, this room is cold. Like, let's close the door. You know, like, there was still thing, but it wasn't as pronounced. It wasn't as bad anymore. So I don't know how something would turn off. Like, it didn't really turn off 100%, but I don't know how something would kind of dampen like that, you know, such a strong kind of negative energy, you know, that if however you want to look at it, you know, it was like, you know, bringing people to the dark side of magic, you know, to make that polar shift, it is kind of strange. I don't understand it, but that, you know, that's what it was, you know?
Yeah.
You know, even with the sleep paralysis stuff, as I got older, it was sleep paralysis. I don't know. Maybe I was being pinned. Even when I got older, that went away. But in that chapter one, that's when I would wake up and couldn't move at all, you know?
Right. You know,
and then it just stopped. You know?
Yeah. And I find it interesting, not interesting, but I can kind of relate to, cause the way you talk about this, you talk as if it's just a matter of fact thing. It doesn't bother you. It's just like, it is what it is. Well, I think actually earlier in the interview, you described it as numb. Like you just kind of become numb to the whole situation and everything going on around you.
You do.
And I can kind of understand what you're saying with that, because I mean, I would never say that I've experienced anything remotely to what you've experienced with that house. But before I moved into the house I live in now, me and my wife were living in an apartment. And every time I sat in my chair in the living room and I was watching TV, almost like clockwork, every time I was sitting in that chair, I would see a shadow figure out of the corner of my eye walk across the hallway from my bedroom into the bathroom. And we had pictures hanging in the hallway, and I would say, the way I would see it would be in the reflection. You would see the reflection in the pictures walking
Wow.
in that direction. And
that's legit.
Yeah. And so like, I tried everything. I, you know, a lot of times it happened when my wife wasn't even home. So there's nobody else in the apartment. It's just her and I, and she wasn't there. And, you know, I would try to recreate it, and I would have her actually walk from the bedroom to the bathroom, all that stuff, you know. But it really got to the point where I was numb to it. It was like, whatever, you know, I know it's going to happen, and it used to freak me out, but now I just don't care, you know. I would just ignore it. It just got boring.
That's exactly it. It's just, you know, it's just the power of repetition, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
And just to kind of piggyback on your story a little bit, that was the validation to the family. You know, my father always had his nose in a book. So when the shadow figures were, you know, walking, there was a certain area where it was almost like kind of what you explain, where they would pass. My father constantly read. He read like a full novel in like 3 days. But
wow.
Like me and my mom, my brother would be sitting, you know, around the television on the couches and the chairs and stuff. And one of us would be like, did you see that? And it was like, yeah, yes, yeah. Yeah. You know, it was like, okay, like two out of three saw it. All right, we win. It is. And that's what makes me wonder about, you know, the pages in the book, you know, the frames of life, you know, that get trapped, like is something on a loop, you know, like in your house at like whatever time it was, you know, okay, it's going to happen at 10 o'clock, 10:05, you know, like, is it something frozen in time at that moment, you know? Cause for us, it was always like my mother would say like, oh, it's 8 o'clock. And like, that's when we would start like seeing stuff. I remember it was like 8 o'clock at night, you know? And during the day too, but it was always like when we were together that, you know, that we had a timestamp for that time, you know, but it was kind of all, you know, throughout the day, but just makes me wonder, you know, like, why would you see the same thing kind of in the same area at the same time? You know, something trapped in a loop, you know, unfortunately, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, obviously I've heard of that before, And, you know, everybody knows I'm a truck driver. I'm not a scientist. I don't know how this all works. But, I mean, it makes sense that there might be some kind of energy just trapped in looping, and not necessarily a spirit, not necessarily a demon or anything like that. Did I just say demon? No, it's demon. I just added a D on the end of it.
Denim.
Yeah, I know. but... You know, I mean, like, maybe just, it is just some kind of energy, like, that just is trapped within this loop of time. But even time itself, they say, doesn't actually exist. So I don't know.
Right. Like, I know.
This is getting way too deep for me now.
Yeah, CERN on the phone.
Oh, man.
Well, there was one thing that, like, always kind of, again, I was never a skeptic, I guess, because, you know, I was touched at a young age with that garbage can incident. But,
right.
Like Einstein, believed in spirits because, you know, everything is made of energy and energy never dies. And it always kind of stuck with me. I'm like, wow, you know, that's a really good point. You know, we are, you know, a ball of energy with, you know, two legs and two arms and a head. So when we die, you know, I do believe in heaven, you know, but, maybe our energy just goes up, but maybe some of the energy just stays down. You know,
you're part body, part spirit, part soul, you know? So
right.
The spirit and soul, I mean, I've done some studies and stuff on it, and I'm not going to get into breaking it down now, but, sure. You know, they're two separate things, but they're both on a supernatural spiritual level, I would say. And then there's the body, but even just the body itself, when you die, that body, the physicalness of it is energy, and it returns to the ground. Mm-hmm. And that what happens, it literally turns back into what it came from, dirt, right?
Sure.
So you have that. And then, you know, the idea of spirits and souls, like those do, you know, ascend into another realm of existence, mm-hmm. you know, it, like you were saying, the energy goes somewhere. It always does.
Sure. It has to, well, you know, according to our theory, yeah, it has to, you know, or not our theory, but the theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I could ever really kind of pick up, you know, going back to the water thing with that back room, is that that room was the closest room to, because, you know, we had a well. That room was the closest room to the well. Actually, my mother was the one that brought that point up. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but, you know, to have one room that's just kind of bonkers and, you know, it's near the water well, you know, who knows, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's really interesting stuff though. I mean, the whole idea of the whole family being haunted and everybody's experiencing things. I mean, that's something, yeah. I think, I mean, it has to be validation for you, experiencing it, you know, as the youngest kid in the family that you're not alone. Everybody's experienced things. You've seen your dad experiencing things, you know, everybody's talked about
it. Yeah. That was the big thing with my father, where it was just kind of like, well, that stinks, but oh, thank God, you know? Like,
yeah. Cause it's know. Like the handcuffs are off now.
Yeah. Like we're all on the same page, you know? Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, man, I really appreciate coming on tonight and sharing with us. That's sure. Some fascinating stuff. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope we gave you something.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. This is a great interview, right. Man. I love talking to you.
Great.
If you ever want to talk again, let me know. Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. And if you listen to the show on YouTube through Conflict Radio, you're going to have to change where you listen to the show on now. So if you want to continue listening to The Confessionals, you're going to have to go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Podbean, blogtalkradio.com, or you can go to our website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, and you can listen to the show there as well. Now, I want to say thank you very much to Conflict for just putting the show on the channel and allowing his audience to hear our show. It means a lot to me, and I really, really appreciated it. If you have not been to the Conflict Radio YouTube channel yet, and you've been listening to the show in other means, I highly recommend you go to that channel and subscribe anyways, because there's a lot of shows on there that are very similar to ours. And if you like The Confessionals, you will definitely like Conflict Radio. So go over there to YouTube and check it out. And once you're done checking it out, go over to Renegade
podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or Stitcher. Hit subscribe, leave us a rating or review, and listen to those shows because I guarantee you it will make you laugh and it's just going to be a good time. It's a nice show to pass time with where we just talk about a lot of different topics, and I think you guys will enjoy it a lot. So go ahead and check it out. So with that said, I hope you guys have a great week. Stay safe, and I will see you next Saturday right here on The Confessionals with a brand new baby boy in the house. I'll talk to you later. Bye.